Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com. Capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another beautiful day. It's warming up. from the weather we've had over the last week plus, which has been fabulous.
I remember a bitter cold Halloween week last year. Remember,
like, don't think like we're going to see that.
There wasn't there like a hard frost or something? Like there was a. I mean, there was a. Maybe. I think it flirted with like with the low 30s Halloween weekend last year, and we are not. Doesn't seem like we're going to get anywhere close to that in the next couple of days.
But doesn't look like we're going to get any cooler than. You know, the 50s.
Speaking of Halloween weekend, by the way, we are helping Auburn kick off Halloween weekend. This Friday, we will be live at Sky Bar, presented by our friends at Bud Light.
Oh, that is good. Looking forward to that. When is, something I need to check, when is the city having trick-or-treat? When is the city, you know... I don't know when to expect trick-or-treaters, is what I'm saying, because Halloween is a week from Thursday. So I'm not sure if they were going to do it.
The downtown trick-or-treat is scheduled for Thursday the 31st.
Okay, so I'm sure that's the same day. That's the same day that that kids will be trick-or-treating in the town,
yeah.
In the city.
I mean, maybe I would expect some this Friday night, although I think it would be a little odd, but I would say downtown the 31st would be
Thursday the 31st. Sometimes, I mean, when it's come on a Sunday or something like that, they've moved it around. So that's cool.
Downtown trick-or-treat's always a cool thing, too, for folks who, you know, on Halloween weekend. That's a neat thing. That's set for you Halloween night, the 31st.
Yep. All right. So we are here on this Tuesday. Sort of a last-minute thing. I didn't think I would be here today. So Don Dunn was here, but Don is going to be in tomorrow because Dan won't be here tomorrow.
That's right. I got one more Troy preseason thing. We got the banquet tomorrow hosted by our pal Barry McKnight.
Always, of course. I mean, he is. I think at least in this part of the country, you look up MC. A picture of Barry.
Game show host.
Yeah.
That's in another life, right? Barry would have been an all-timer, an all-time game show host. But and you know what? They could have considered him for the Jeopardy gig.
A former contestant.
A former champion, right? Didn't he win his he won his episode, I think. So he'll be hosting that thing tomorrow. That's going to be a lot of fun. Troy, exciting season coming for Troy basketball, Bill. Both teams, the women predicted second in the Sun Belt, despite only three players returning from last year's roster. But two of those players were voted to the All-Conference team, which helps.
Always is good.
And when you lead the conference in offense for 11 straight seasons, like Shanda Rigby has, teams sort of expect even if you replace your players, you're probably going to have a pretty good team. The men picked third. In the Sun Belt, and that's the highest in like a decade, I think, for the highest preseason projection for the Troy men's team. So exciting men's and women's basketball seasons coming for Troy, and I'll be down there tomorrow to help them get some help them get ready for the start of the year.
If you want to talk some basketball, we're wide open for that as well. A lot of excitement about Auburn basketball as well.
How does the Auburn Furman thing work this weekend? Is it just going to be reports from people on site as to how it looks? There's no plan for television or radio,
right? No. There is none.
So there are you will have to. I would go ahead and find some Furman beat writers right now and follow them on social media if I want to know what's going on.
That's a very good idea.
And I think that's where you're going to get your. I mean, there are probably some Auburn fans in the area that'll be going too.
Oh yeah.
I don't know
no
what
question.
Kind of,
they're Auburn fans in the Greenville area.
This was announced so late, and it's the same weekend as a road football game. I mean, when
but it's Sunday.
It's
so,
it's Sunday.
You know, might have some people that go to Lexington, then Greenville.
Yeah, although you might have already booked your flights, depending on how you're getting to Lexington too. I know that's why Ferguson's going to have a hard time getting to the game in Greenville on Sunday. He'd love to, but he's got a flight from Lexington back home. I think scheduled for that same day.
Hey, but the you got to sell that thing.
Yeah, I know. You got to.
I'm sure you could find somebody else that'd like to get back quickly.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the plan is for.
That's my kind of planning there. It's like that's my kind of
yeah.
I like those kinds of challenges, and to see if I can find somebody that can work with me. And
what's the word on the ticket situation for
Furman?
For Furman.
I think there are plenty available.
Okay, maybe folks. Well, I don't, but there's no media coverage of it, and we'll. It's crazy to think though, like Monday, Auburn will have played not just a secret scrimmage, but an exhibition game, and you know when we go on the air Monday, we'll be able to talk about
right.
more than just hypotheticals about how this team looks. You'll have a little bit of you'll have a little bit of evidence as to what it looks like. What are you expecting guard wise? Right, like JP and Denver, and
I really don't know. I mean, we've heard so much more Denver lately that I wonder. If it'll be JP or Denver getting the start and exactly how they split the minutes. I'm sure both will get plenty of minutes, but it'll be interesting to see how the minutes there at the point guard position are spread out between those two guys and Tahad Pettiford. So, I mean, I think you'll see all three of them there at the point. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And, I mean, since this is JP against his former school, I would think he'd get plenty of opportunity to get some minutes against his former teammates.
Oh, I would think so. I mean, we'll see if how Auburn decides to play the point guard distribution with JP and how it looks with JP in Denver. I keep seeing things on social media or even media traditional media that project Auburn to start Denver and Chad and Miles and JP, right? And sort of, with Chad at the four or something like that. I don't know how much you're going to see. I mean, I think it's an interesting lineup. The thought of going JP, Denver, Miles, Chad, and Janai, I just don't know how much you're going to see that depending on, because Auburn's got a lot of other options at the four, mm-hmm. including Janai himself. Who
yeah,
might...
I don't think
is it too small?
I don't think you're going to see Chad at the four.
Yeah.
Unless there's a foul situation or something like that, I think Chad's going to be at a wing.
I think
don't expect him down in the front court.
It would take Auburn's fours being a real disappointment, the position, what they're getting out of the fours. And I also, it would seemingly take those four backcourt players, JP, Denver, Miles and Chad, it would take all four of them being indispensable, right? It would take the four of them being so good that you have to get
more minutes from them than you would if they were splitting time.
Exactly. So, I mean, and I don't necessarily think that's where they are to start the season. But I don't know with any certainty which one of the four. I mean, Miles is the newest arrival to the team, but he's also somebody people are very excited about. Chad was, Chad was pretty comfortable coming off the bench for most of last season, but last season was Chad's first season,
and this is his last.
And this is his last season, and he's a preseason all-conference player, who is seemingly understands how valuable he is to this team. JP in Denver, right? I mean, you could always bring one of the two of them
mm-hmm.
off the bench.
Although, I mean, the way Bruce talks about Denver, I he's going to start, I think, somewhere.
Yeah.
Either at one of the two. He's going to start.
And JP was a guy who, started every game the last 2 years at Furman as a point guard and, would seemingly be the kind of point. I mean, seemingly he's the kind of point guard, that would be your first option and a guy getting a lot of minutes. So I think that's how that situation plays out over the next couple of weeks is a really interesting. I mean, how JP fits in general, I think, is a really interesting And it's more interesting than with Miles, because Miles Kelly is going to play off ball, presumably, and you think that his game translates to a lot of different places. With JP, I mean, you're putting a new point guard on a very experienced team,
right,
with a lot of guys who know where they want the ball and when they want the ball and how they want the ball, and that's it's a tough thing for any quarterback. It was very difficult for Auburn's quarterbacks, or for Auburn's point guards last year, and it feels like, yeah, it's a new challenge for a for a guy like JP Pegues to figure out as he joins this team.
Yeah, so gonna be very interesting as the men do get underway up in Greenville against Furman before they come home for that exhibition game against Florida Atlantic. There's still some tickets available for that as well. So for the folks that weren't able to get season tickets and would like to see a game, there's your opportunity.
We'll probably still talk some Auburn, Missouri, but that was all we did yesterday, so right. I wouldn't mind mixing
in. We definitely will. If you didn't get a chance to get in and get your thoughts, get your thoughts out about Auburn's latest loss, we're glad to do that. There is also, we didn't also get into any of the other games. So, we've got plenty we can talk about football-wise.
Yes, we did not talk.
Well,
we didn't talk Texas-Georgia. We didn't talk Bama-Tennessee. LSU continues to roll. That's a big one this weekend, LSU-A&M. I think it was a really interesting weekend of college football. We also know the World Series matchup. We talked about it a little bit yesterday when Brett called.
It is odd. Again, it's been set, but, that you have this much time off between the championship series and the World Series.
And that is entirely because Fox wants to have the World Series dates locked in place so they can sell them to advertisers.
Right, and you notice they are avoiding Sundays.
Yes, yes. Fox.
Because
Fox,
it's Friday, Saturday, then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday.
Yes, it is. And you know what? They're avoiding Thursday, too.
Yes.
They're
obviously avoiding Sunday.
Couple of nights of NFL football they're choosing to not go heads up against. And they also – it's Rutgers-USC after the World Series on Friday night on Fox, 10 p.m. local time – or 10 p.m. our time for Rutgers at USC. And that was scheduled by Fox. Talked about it a little bit yesterday. That was scheduled by Fox on the off chance that you would have either the Dodgers or the Yankees – in the World Series, you could be able to go from a World Series game featuring one of the two teams in one of those two markets into a college football game featuring, and they still look at, TV still looks at Rutgers as a New York team, and it's the idea that you could have a New York-LA World Series matchup or a World Series matchup featuring one of those two, and then a game featuring Rutgers and USC. Now you actually have New York-LA in both of the games, a remarkable bit of fortuitous break for Fox, and so you'll have Game 1 of the World Series, and then after Game 1 of the World Series, Fox will go to coverage of Rutgers at USC on Friday night.
Yeah, so
how you feeling about the World Series? What are you thinking?
I don't know. Your Dodgers are a tough team. I keep thinking that the starting pitching is going to end up costing them, but it really hasn't. I think the Yankees starting pitching right now, because of the injury situation the Dodgers have, Yankee starting pitching is probably they have an advantage there. I just don't know. The Dodger team seems like they're just they're more resilient than some Dodger teams I've seen before. It's been a while for the Yankees too. It's been 15 years since they've been in a series, but they're pretty darn good. I don't know. These are two really, really talented teams.
I would say, the Dodgers are at home, which is nice. Yeah. Garrett Cole is pitching very, very well. That's a genuine ace the Yankees have there they can go with in Game One. I think it's Flaherty, but it could be Yama. Yoshi, Garrett Cole would be the two biggest contracts ever for starting pitchers facing off against each other.
Right.
In Game One, if the Yankees decide to go with Yoshi, the story's been the bottom of the Dodgers lineup, right? Kike.
Yeah, yeah. It's been amazing.
Edman, who thought Edman was important.
I like Tommy Edman.
I like him too. But
he's hit with more pop since he's been with the Dodgers than ever in his career.
Who thought Edman was a huge deadline pickup, though, right? I mean, the Dodgers, and it is a couple of really shrewd, going and getting Flaherty, going and getting Kopech, going and getting Tommy Edman. I mean, having these guys available that weren't on the team until the trade deadline, they've come through in big moments. And yeah, I'm thinking, I mean, I'd love a couple of these guys on the Dodgers team that have they've grinded these last couple of years. I'd love to see them rewarded with another championship.
And I'd like to see the Yankees.
Of course. Yeah, no. What do you? I mean, and again, we were talking about it before. You can't let Soto leave. I just don't think
they've got to do everything they can.
Unless Soto doesn't want to stay in New York.
And you know what? Giancarlo looks like Giancarlo, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Four homers in the ALCS.
And when he hits, I mean, he had no doubters too. Right? I mean, he hits the kind of home runs where the outfielders don't move.
They've got three of those guys.
They got three of those guys. No, you're right. They got a couple of those guys. But if Soto wants to stay, I just don't. I find a way to make it work. You know what I mean? Raise ticket prices. Do whatever you have to do. But you can't let that guy leave.
Yeah. So that gets started on Friday. Give us your thoughts on that. Anything you want to talk about sports wise, Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And how can you do so? You can call us on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast.
We're right back. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Born and raised in Lee County.
6-7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Just a note. You may have been wondering where's Andy? Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, usually with us on Tuesdays, had a situation come up where he could not be with us. So he'll be back with us. As a matter of fact, he said I think he said he could be with us on Thursday.
Okay,
if we'd like. When's Ferg headed to?
I think Ferg is flying up Friday morning, so okay. We should have Ferg in the house for Thursday's show. I would think so.
Okay. Well, we may have Andy with us as well, for a little while on Thursday, or we can tell him. I mean, we can wait till next week, but we will reschedule when Andy is back in town. He's out of town today, so it's just Dan and Bill here with you on the Tuesday Drive. Drew at the controls. Come on in and join us. If you didn't get a chance to get through yesterday, we'd like your thoughts on college football from over the weekend, but anything you want to talk about sports-wise.
We talked a lot of Auburn, Missouri, and another game full of missed opportunities. Yep. and
same song, different verse.
Yeah, like, I mean, different problems popping up at inopportune moments, and when Auburn has, it felt like Auburn had ample opportunity to make the plays there in the second half. I mean, so Bill, do you remember? They showed the stat during the game. Auburn is what 100 and
was 105-1 with a double digit lead in the second half.
Do you know the other
14 point lead?
Do you know the other loss?
Yeah, I believe the other one was Mississippi State.
Mississippi State 21, correct. Yeah. 28-10 at the half.
Yep.
And Mississippi State comes back
and destroyed Auburn
and wins that one. That's the game where Bo Nix gets injured, mm-hmm. as well as Bo Nix's final game at Auburn. But that's a yeah, I mean it's disappointing, and you know we talked a little bit yesterday about the different problems with the Auburn offense, and I want to retract something as best I can. I was talking about Peyton Thorne, and I cited the pass. It's the specific play. It's the first play after the Jarquez fumble is overturned. It's on the drive that ends mm-hmm. with the Thorne fumble in Missouri territory. But on that drive, the first play after Auburn gets the ball back. Is a pass from Thorne that bounces before it gets to Lambert Smith.
Right.
In real time, it's tough to tell. But I am.
I thought it was tipped.
I'm virtually certain that it was tipped at the line of scrimmage when you watch it back. You know, not from behind, but there's a D lineman in front of Thorne that gets a hand up. Now that doesn't excuse the Auburn offense in general. I think you know the diagnosis I have. You know, again, Bill. You know, I think it feels like Freeze is running the offense he wants to have a year from now or 2 years from now, instead of doing whatever he can to get the most out of this group. And I'd say the number one culprit there is calling plays that expect Peyton Thorne to have a lot of time so he can get it downfield.
Yes.
When the pass...
You can't take deep shots if the opposition is looking for you to pass this year. You just quarterback doesn't have time.
No.
And Peyton's more mobile than any of the other Auburn quarterbacks.
And I would say that's where an adjustment hasn't come, right? Is the constant. I know that Hugh Freeze wants, and he describes it as being aggressive. I know Hugh Freeze wants to take deep shots.
Yes, he does.
But when you're tackled,
I'm all for that if the quarterback has time.
When your tackles are struggling like these guys, and I know the interior blocking hasn't been perfect either, but when the tackles are struggling the way Auburn's tackles have struggled this year, when you're making a tackle change three plays in into the game after the bye week.
Yeah.
You had 2 weeks to look, and you made a choice, and three plays in, you gave that guy the hook. Like, when that's going on, I think it's absolutely fair to really question the disconnect between what the coach wants this offense to be and what it feels like this offense can be based on the talent they have on the team.
Mm-hmm. And today was another of the viewing windows for the media, and a couple of different reports are indicating what we expected, that the first offensive group is indeed Dylan Wade at left tackle, Braden Joyner at left guard, then Connor Lue, Jeremiah Wright, and Tutal Miller. So that's the look of the offensive line. At least today. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the drive hotline, and Terry is up first. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill. Dan, how y'all doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
Great.
I just asked that, I guess. I'm out of it today.
I'm sorry, Bill, did you say
something? No, I just said I'm a little out of it today. That's fine.
Okay, well, but, are we all?
Yeah.
Are you guys disturbed at all by the Auburn fans that are finding, you know, some satisfaction in Alabama's struggles? They're 5-2. We're 2-5. My goodness.
No, I mean, I'm not really upset by it. I can understand it. I mean, goodness, Auburn fans are looking for anything to ease the pain, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're setting yourself up, though. I mean, I would be careful. We just talked about it yesterday. You know, when Eugene Asante was talking about Auburn celebrating up 17-3 in the third quarter, I'd be really careful about spiking the football, because Alabama has a second loss for the first time since 2007 this early in the regular season, because a 10-2 team can still absolutely make the college football playoff.
Yep.
And this is monster movie season, Terry. And
yeah, I think a 10-2 team
pointing and laughing at Alabama leave themselves open to look really silly if Alabama figures things out before the end of the season.
Well, if Alabama goes 9-3, that's kind of Auburn's ceiling, wasn't it? I mean, their floor is our ceiling, right?
Well, yeah, but that's not... You know, that's not unexpected with the talent level that both teams have right now.
No, I agree. But I'm just saying, I take people, you know, I'm trying to say that people say that Alabama's floor is our ceiling. Three losses would be our ceiling. And now we're 2-5, and they're 5-2. So I tell people, be careful what you think about or say.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't change Auburn's season. No. You know what I mean? Auburn would still be 2-5 even if Alabama had beaten Vanderbilt and Tennessee, I guess if you're using that to feel better about Auburn's season, whatever helps you get out of bed in the
who remembers Auburn won the ACC tournament last year? Alabama went to the Final Four.
What was that,
those things you got to remember. I mean, that people don't choose, but that's the way it's about basketball, of course. So I wanted to comment about Magoo, the kicker. Great story, awesome story. Good kid. I met him.
Question.
He's a good kid. Mm-hmm. But he's not as good as Alex McPherson. He's not.
Not right now. No, he's not.
No,
he was, you know, a spectacular kicker in high school. Hasn't really been kicking a football that long, and had never really had he'd had nothing but success.
Is there any report on that from the practice, from the viewing window, if you can tell?
I asked Hugh yesterday about how Alex is doing. He said that, as a matter of fact, that in the ball game at Missouri, if they'd had another field goal, and especially if it were 40 yards and in, they were going to go to Alex, and he's getting closer and closer. So I would expect to see some of Alex this weekend.
So missing the 30.
Yeah, it was like 31 yards.
Missing the 31 yarder might have been a breaking point for Towns.
Towns has got a tremendous leg. I think right now, a lot of kickers go through it. You have those slumps. We've seen the greatest kickers have times where, it just gets in their head a little bit and they're thinking too much.
It would be far more concerning if Towns was a fifth-year senior.
Yeah.
The fact that he's a true freshman who was supposed to redshirt this year because you thought you were going to have Big Mac. It's disappointing, but I would caution against closing the book on him for sure.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case by any means. But kicking a lot like golf, I've always heard.
Yes.
It's more mental than anything.
Yeah, it helps that you have a good enough leg that you can make them. But yes, a lot of those guys are, they have, in golf, they've got great swings. In football, they've got great technique and strong legs. But you start thinking, it gets in your head. You start worrying about pulling the ball left. You overcompensate and you're missing right. So yeah, it's a very good analogy.
I always heard that. So, I appreciate it, guys. You have a great day.
Good hearing from you, Terry. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon, Bill and Dan. And we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Now, today we will have Jake Crane joining us in the second hour. Just no Andy Burcham. Andy out of town, had to be out of town today. So we'll see if we either have him later on this week or just wait till next week to talk to him again. In the meantime, let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I was going to ask y'all a question about everybody's piling on Freeze, primarily about him not taking a transfer portal quarterback this year.
Mm-hmm.
My comment with that would be that I don't believe that Hugh Freeze controls a checkbook. I believe he's got a finite amount of resources to deal with, and I think the people that they were looking at, like Cam Ward, were looking at like $2 million, and my question is, if they were to come up with $2 million to give to Cam Ward, what do you do with Peyton Thorne, who's on an NIL contract to some degree doing something? Do you tell him to go find another school, or how does that work?
Well, going in reverse order, yes, with the situation with Peyton, if you'd gone out and gotten somebody like that, he probably would have. Probably would have gone somewhere else. You would have lost a quarterback or more if that had been the case.
Yeah, I imagine. Again, I don't know how it works behind the scenes, like contractually. I think if Auburn had decided in December that they wanted to bring in a new quarterback via the transfer portal, I think depending on the quarterback you bring in, that quarterback could be viewed as competition for Peyton Thorne or an outright replacement for Peyton Thorne. My understanding is a lot of these NIL deals are year to year anyway. So, I think it would have been a matter of maybe, an option not being picked up or it being made clear that there's, probably needs to seek, I don't know. I also don't know I don't know how badly Hugh Freeze wanted to start over with a new quarterback from the portal after last season. I think he thought if you make the right adjustments to the offense and have a full offseason with Peyton Thorne, he is a guy who won 11 games in the Big Ten a couple of years ago. So I think there was the risk of having to bring in a quarterback and take the ups and downs of a new guy learning a new system. I don't know if it was just financial, the decision for Hugh Freeze to go with a different to stick with To stick with last year's room largely at the quarterback position instead of bringing in an outsider.
And then, John, we weren't privy to, you know, what Auburn's numbers were or any limitations there were for Hugh Freeze. But the indications that I have gotten are that had Hugh Freeze really wanted to go after another quarterback, that they would have come up with the money to be competitive against any of those guys.
So, I mean,
I think it was more that Hugh Freeze really decided he was gonna go all in on Peyton Thorne and trying to spend that money, not go overboard and spend money on other pieces.
Every position they viewed as a priority in the offseason, they upgraded via the portal and via recruiting. And the fact that they didn't do that at quarterback tells me.
Yeah, Lambert Smith is definitely an investment that has paid off. He's done a superb job.
Absolutely right.
The left tackle that we bought from Mississippi State ain't earned his keep.
Nah, it has been a disappointing year for Percy, and he wasn't the first left tackle that Auburn went after. Fernando Carmona at Arkansas was somebody that Auburn really, really wanted.
Also, I was going to say Hugh Freeze is, you know, he's a proven commodity as a head coach in the SEC and at Liberty. And I'm not going to say he's a championship level coach, but he's a solid coach. And I've never seen him have this kind of a year. I just don't know if it's karma coming back to bite Auburn in the butt all at one time for games that we've stolen from Missouri when they've dropped the ball crossing the goal line. You know, a bunch of crazy stuff like that in the past, or Bo Nix with the grounding call behind the against Arkansas. This has got to be more than Hugh Freeze's coaching, cause horrible season. Am I wrong?
it sure feels that way.
I mean, people don't want analysis that talks a lot about how much luck is involved in these things. And while Auburn has not made the most of their chances, they've also been, you know, this feels like the least lucky Auburn team of the last 20 years, too, when you think about how many of these things are inches from going one way or the other, and none of them seem to go Auburn's way. And the touchdown slipping out of the fingertips of an Auburn football player on Saturday that seemingly would have ended the game is yet another example of that. It's not all bad luck. You have to do the most with the breaks you get. But Auburn, has not been able to do enough with them.
Yeah, unfortunately, when I saw the drop pass in the end zone and then the ensuing missed 27-30-yard field goal, I went and started doing some chores because I could see what time it was, and unfortunately, it proved calamitous again. I could feel it slipping away. But well, I went to my first Auburn game in 1981, and in my lifetime watching football games, Auburn has never had this kind of a
You're right.
Of horrendous seasons.
Auburn has been a team that throughout history has been pretty darn good in close games. You know, I mean, they've lost some heartbreakers, and you may not think about the ones you've won because it seems like the losses stick with you longer. But that's something. That's what's even more frustrating to a lot of longtime fans is like, man, you need to at least be splitting these close games is the way it feels.
Agreed. I appreciate y'all's time. Thank you.
Hey, John, thank you for the call. 334-321-1390.
Now, usually if you're going to be a lot better, if you're going to have a turnaround if you're going to have a quick turnaround as a college football team, if you're going to go from a 4-win team to an 8 or 9-win team in one season, it's usually going to come after a season where you lost a lot of close games.
That is right.
You look at Colorado.
That is right. So that could be a good thing.
There's a little silver lining for Auburn. Yeah. You look at Colorado last year, and 4 or 5 of Colorado's losses are by one possession. They go 4-8. A year later, they're a conference championship contender in the Big 12. I mean, these things can happen. But it's not guaranteed. And the fact that you're not winning close games, and it's often, you know, it's unforced errors, right? It feels like it's self-inflicted mistakes that are costing you. That's troubling.
Yes. 334-321-1390. Right back to the phone. We go, who's next?
Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you again, Dan, Bill. You know, we talked about on Friday that we were going to run the ball, and we tried to do that, and that didn't seem to work either. Dan, you're a big movie guy. I feel like we should either sacrifice a live chicken, you know, during Lala Bull Durham.
We need a young priest and an old priest. How about
that? Yeah, or Joe Boo's rum needs a refill.
Oh,
or something,
no, somebody you think Harris got into Joe Boo's rum? Again, no. I mean, who knows what went wrong.
It also reminds me of like the movie The Replacements with Hackman, where you know they talk about quicksand. I just feel like we're in quicksand all the time.
You know what it is? It's Glengarry Glen Ross. We need closers. They need to put the coffee down in the football complex until some closers step in there.
Just one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, or just kind of bring up my own two cents, I guess. I mean, everything's been said that you can say, but I do agree with Tax. I think with what he said yesterday, I do think you give Freeze, you know, minimum of 3 years, regardless of what happens. Even if we go 2-10 this year, I think you got to give it to him. I think anything less than that, and you're just talking about blowing up the program again, and I don't think that's a good result. You know, we're all disappointed. We're not where we want to be, but I still do have faith, and especially with the fact that the guys like Deuce Knight and those guys have come out and said, just stick with us, you know. I think we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, that was definitely a positive when you see a comment like that from Deuce Knight, who just recently, flipped and committed to Auburn.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that anytime you can recruit and the environment we're in, I think it says a lot about Auburn, and I think it says a lot about him being able to do that. Now you just got to show us. The comment I was going to make is it's just about, and you know, I don't like to pick on these kids because they are kids. And a lot of people have said, you know, that Peyton Thorne didn't really play all that bad. On Saturday, you guys have kind of said it, and I've heard Blackerby say it and some of these other people. And I have one thing that I disagree a little bit on. I know he's not the entire problem. I know we have offensive line problems. We have dropping problems. But I feel like with him, he makes a lot of little mistakes that you see that don't even involve things that may or may not happen on the field. So in other words, you know, under pressure, he folds like a Temu $20 lawn chair. I mean, the guy, you know, if they get any kind of rush, and he's not planning to run, he folds. And I'm not saying that I'm playing in that position, and I don't expect him to get sacked every once in a while. But I don't know. It just seems like any pressure at all, I saw him kind of just take a dive and not even try to attempt to throw the ball away. And I know some of those times he probably couldn't even do that, but I thought there were more times that he could have done that. The other thing I see a lot
before you get to the other thing, Brian, because I had someone tell me on Saturday, one of the things that frustrated them about Auburn's quarterback play under Freeze, because it was also true of Ashford, but I think especially Thorne, is how quickly the quarterbacks are willing to abandon the pass and try to scramble out of trouble instead of either dumping it off to someone closer to the line of scrimmage or, you know, following through with the original plan and you know, even if it's bearing down and taking the hit. You know, I say that without advocating for a quarterback change, because I don't think, based on what we've seen, that any of this gets better with Hank Brown. And Walker White doesn't appear to be in the plans right now if they're not taking him to Missouri after the bye week. Having said that, I do think that's a fair criticism of Thorne, that it's, you know, at times it can be it can go to scram. People say that about Knicks too, right? Like even acknowledging the offensive line problems, it feels like, you know, too often it can turn into a scramble drill.
Yeah, and I just feel like he crumples. I don't. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, dude. You know, he plays a hard position in the SEC, but it just feels to me like, you know, he kind of goes into the fetal position, kind of like we used to see Clint Mosley do, more so than just stand in the pocket, and make a throw. You're going to get hit. I'm sorry, but that's kind of what you're in there for. And again, I know I'm not in that position, so you can't. It's easy to stay from the sidelines, but. And then the other things that I just see, little things that I think I see him do that I think all contribute to him, help us not getting over the hump. You know, we say he does all right, but does he really? Does he really give us the best chance to win? You know, we saw one full game and one half game from Hank, in which, again, I don't think those interceptions from Hank were all his fault, and he pulled him. Now, he may not be fully versed in the
Take the interceptions aside, though. Auburn's offense did nothing in the first half against Arkansas. Like pick the worst half of football since they went back to Peyton. Like, pick the worst half of football you've seen. The second half against Arkansas, the whole game against Oklahoma, whole game against Georgia, whole game against Missouri. Pick the worst half. It was better than the half Hank played against Arkansas.
No, you're not wrong. I mean, we drove. We had a lot. And again, you can't take the interceptions away only because they happened, right? So they you know, we were driving.
If they're just incompletions, you're still 4 of 10 with like 60 yards passing, right? Like,
right. I guess my thing is that I thought we could have seen. And again, I know the backup quarterback isn't always.
I had absolutely no problem with going to Peyton Thorne in the second half against Arkansas, based on what I saw in the first half from Hank.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I saw Hank throw some gutsy calls. I thought I saw. I don't know if you guys watched the breakdown by Aaron Murray after that game, and I mean, he made some good points in the fact that, and it was specifically after the Arkansas game. He thought that Hank should have actually been the quarterback moving forward. Again, it is what it is. I'm not saying Hank would solve our problems. I just don't think that Thorne does anything for us either. That's the biggest thing. Is like, are we better because he's in there? I mean, we scored 10 points on Saturday.
Yeah, Auburn hasn't been able to score. Now, of course, I was going to say,
Missouri was probably Thorne's worst game since going back in against Arkansas, too. Like, I mean,
I would argue that he looked his best in Oklahoma. I mean,
I mean, Thorne has 300.
Remember,
plus
Aaron Murray was standing up for him after the Cal game.
Yeah,
so.
I think after Missouri, if they want to reevaluate the difference between how much better Thorne is than the other quarterbacks and what they need to be doing for the final five games, because the other thing to keep in mind is, like, I know he's got to win every game, but if you make this progress, if you make progress over the last five games and you do it with, if you do it with Thorne and Jarquez and Lambert Smith and Robert Lewis getting the majority and Rivaldo getting the majority of the playing time at their positions. How do you carry that into the offseason when all of those guys are out of eligibility after the season's
right.
over?
Right. Well, and that's kind of why I think you give the reins to Hank at this point, too, because, I mean, what difference does it make? At this point, what difference does it make? I mean, it's not we're going to go to a bowl. I mean, that's if we win out even, or, you know, I don't know. That's
it's hard for me to imagine the coach thinking, what difference does it make when he feels like, I've got a chance to win this next ball game, and these guys are my best chance to try to win it. So it's a lot easier, easier to say when we're not the ones getting the W's and the L's.
No, you're right. That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
Great stuff.
Anyways, I'll let you guys go. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. We have more callers holding. We'll be right back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Expert care for your .com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and Rain Man is up next on the drive hotline. Hey, Rain Man.
How's it going today, fellas?
Pretty good.
Oh, man, it was a rough weekend for the state of Alabama.
Yes, you're right about that.
And you got to feel like a little bad for Alabama. The state of Tennessee owns them twice now.
I don't know if you have to feel bad.
Okay, maybe I don't. I'm lying. I don't feel bad at all.
This is the first time they've lost two games in the regular season since Nick Saban's first year at Alabama.
Yeah.
That's
don't
madness.
Survive.
But you know what? It's a reminder. Like, nothing lasts forever. Like, everything ends in this era of college football. And I mean, I'm not saying Alabama's over. I mean, they could still make the college. They could still win the SEC. They could still make the college football playoff.
They could still. They absolutely still
absolutely
could
still do all those things.
Here's one for you that's great. I saw this the other day. You realize that as much complaining as there was about Gus Malzahn, his team's never lost more than two games in a row, and that now Auburn has lost at least four games in a row for the last four seasons?
Yep.
Yeah, we've hit a skid here. It's bad. It's a rough situation. I'm going to say, as weak as we are at quarterback, we're weak in a lot of places. We're still shuffling the offensive line around. Can't figure it out. We've got some good young defensive backs, but all our older upperclassmen are injured, and we're having to play a bunch of true freshmen. We still have wide receivers, according to our head coach, running the wrong routes 8 weeks into the season. There's not a quarterback on the roster that can fix this unless my Freudian flip with Peyton Manning and Peyton Thorne somehow turns out to be true, and it's Peyton Manning circa 20 years ago. I don't know that there's any way you fix it. At this point, the real question is 3-9 our ceiling?
To quote, I don't think it's the ceiling, but it's not unlikely. I mean, Auburn is still talented enough to win the next few ball games. Yeah. Kentucky's no more talented than Missouri or Oklahoma. I know they are. I said the next few.
That looks like a tough draw.
But I mean, Kentucky, ULM, Kentucky Vandy, ULM, Auburn could win those ball games, but they could have won a couple at least of their four losses, four losses other than Georgia.
Well, that's true. Technically, if we could have injured Brady Cook more severely, I guess. It is the consensus of myself and everyone I've talked to that if he'd played the entire game, this wouldn't have been close.
May not have been, Auburn converts that pass in the end zone. It wouldn't matter.
Hey, Peyton Thorne doesn't flat overthrow that guy on that last possession before their game-winning drive. We get a field goal, and it changes things, too. I'm with you. Just, you know, it's hard to take any solace or comfort in any of that because their quarterback came in and just promptly took them on two touchdown drives, carved their defense up like it was nothing, and he's no Peyton Manning.
He won 11 games with him a year ago, so he is a proven winner. Rayman, we're out of time. Great hearing from you. We need to get to our top of the hour break. We have another hour to go. Love for you to join in here on the Tuesday Drive.
And Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Lively first hour and not unexpected. I mean, things have not been going very well, and that's sort of an understatement for Auburn football. But it was a really interesting weekend in college football, as Brian was talking about. I mean, I don't remember if it was Brian, one of our callers, talking about, you know, the fact that Auburn wasn't the only team in the state that lost. Really, there were a few teams in the state that lost, of course, including the University of Alabama, losing their second ball game. And as you mentioned, Dan, first time since 2007, they've lost two regular season games before November arrives. And now they have Missouri this weekend.
Yeah, a couple of big games in the SEC for the teams that feel like they still have faint college football playoff chances. I mean, Missouri, I mean, you're now talking.
Hey, Missouri wins.
I know.
Then I mean, because nobody's talking about Missouri at all.
We're still talking about Missouri as a team that in four major conference games.
It's like, who have they beaten? And they haven't been impressive in doing so.
I mean, they've played.
But they're winning.
They've played Boston College, Vanderbilt, A&M, and Auburn. And yes, they're 3-1 in those four games. At no point in any of those four games have they looked like a team that should be in the college football playoff. But that's not the criteria. It's what are you at the end of the season? And if Missouri can win in Tuscaloosa, even with an Alabama team that's losing more than your usual Alabama team, that would give them a chance to pick up a signature win away from home that would really help make the argument that Missouri belongs in the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. If Missouri wins out, they're a genuine threat it depends on what else happens, but a Missouri team at 11-1 could be in the SEC championship game. Like, if Missouri were to win the next five, I mean, it would depend. I mean, now that Texas has lost a game, Texas and A&M are going to be playing. I mean, Missouri would not have the tiebreaker with A&M, but I mean, you could have a real mess on your hands, by the way, Bill.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How many 7-1 teams could you possibly have in the SEC? Let me think about this. If Missouri were to win out, Missouri could be 7-1.
All right, LSU and A&M are playing this weekend, and the loser will have their first loss. So you could look at a way where both those teams.
Okay, how about this? What if LSU, A&M, Missouri, and Georgia are all 7-1 in the SEC? How do you decide an SEC championship game participant there?
I'm looking at their schedules. That could happen.
How do you figure out which two of those four 7-1 teams?
The first thing you do is head to head.
Missouri lost to A&M,
so that would eliminate Missouri.
Right.
And then the other three don't have head to head, do they?
No, I don't think so.
LSU.
LSU would have beaten A&M. Is that what we're saying in this situation? Because LSU A&M play this weekend.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I guess so.
But wait, but then Missouri and A&M are going to say, wait a minute, Georgia, because they didn't play because Georgia wasn't.
That's the way these ridiculous tiebreakers work, though, yeah. Sometimes. If you don't play a game, you're an advantage because you didn't play them. And the of course, the team that wins has an advantage. They're 1-0.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. So how would that be? LSU would have beaten A&M. A&M would have beaten Missouri.
And Georgia-Missouri wouldn't have played.
Georgia-Missouri wouldn't have played. Missouri would be 0-1 in that case.
Presumably, Missouri would have beaten
A&M would be 1-1, and LSU would be 1-0.
Right, and Georgia wouldn't have played any of the other teams involved in the tiebreaker.
LSU might win. LSU might be the one seed.
Right. Now, Texas could still be involved in this, too. If Texas wins out, they're a 7-1 SEC team. Now, they would have needed to beat A&M in that situation in order to get there. Mm-hmm. So you're probably – but, like – I mean, you could have multiple 7-1 teams and try to decode it somehow. And Missouri could be one of them.
Well, what if A&M and LSU haven't lost? What if A&M beats LSU?
Right.
And then LSU wins out, and then A&M loses to Texas.
Then you could have.
You might be able to have five.
You could have
one loss teams.
You could have 7-1 Georgia. You could have 7-1 Missouri if they won this week. If they won out. You could have 7-1 LSU
you'd
in that situation.
You'd have 7-1 A&M, and you'd have 7-1 Texas.
Yeah, you'd have 5-7-1 teams.
Five SEC teams
potentially
that could finish 7-1. Well, don't you know the SEC office is hoping that nothing like that happens?
Right, and keep in mind, you know, Vandy's 2-1. Vandy's
got a tough schedule.
Vandy's got. Now, by the way, we haven't mentioned Tennessee. Tennessee's got some of these teams. Tennessee's got Georgia left on the schedule.
Tennessee does have Georgia left.
But other than that.
So that would mean one of those two teams. So you could plug in Tennessee instead of Georgia in that five-team tie that we had.
But you've got the potential for, yeah, and then Vanderbilt has a couple of these teams left on the schedule, LSU, Tennessee, and Texas left for Vandy as well as Auburn. By the way, top 25 Vanderbilt, by the way.
That is right.
Breaking into the top 25 for the first time in over a decade. In the in one of the two polls this week,
yes, and deserving to.
Yeah, I think so for sure. So the SEC slate this weekend it's Auburn, Kentucky. That's the 6:45 game on SEC Network. Games kick off with Oklahoma Ole Miss is going to be your game after College Game Day. That feels like a real tough draw for Oklahoma right now, Bill.
It does. Oklahoma's offense is. Still bad.
And I don't know how much just I don't know.
They fired their offensive coordinator. They got a new offensive coordinator. They went back to Jackson Arnold this past week.
The defense going to go out and hold Ole Miss to 10
no,
points?
No, like, they're
is
not.
That, is that, I mean,
no, they're not.
Yeah, I think
Ole Miss is going to win comfortably.
And if Ole Miss can score early, they have the chance to bury him. Arkansas is in Starkville
that
at 11:45.
Mississippi State's offense is getting better.
They're playing better football.
They've scored, 58 points or 55 points in the last two ballgames.
It still feels like they're substantially the worst team in the conference. But
it does. But I feel like they're getting a little better. Do you feel that way about Auburn?
No. No,
Auburn's really, the same. It's the same thing.
I feel like we're talking about a lot of the same stuff we talked about against Cal. Maybe not turnovers. Maybe not the interceptions. Like
no, Auburn, no, you're right. Without the turnovers, but they're still making mistakes.
But you know what? But the
that are costly.
And we said this afterward. People looked at the turnovers after Cal, and they thought that was the only problem.
Eliminate the turnovers, and Auburn's unbeaten.
And it's no. They're still on a per play and per drive basis. There's still just not enough efficiency, and I keep coming back to the desire to have and Hugh Freeze uses the word aggressive, right? Like the desire to have that offense.
Well, the word he used yesterday is free. Just play free and easy, loose, and they're not.
Yeah, I think it's tough.
And they're not calling the plays that way.
Well, I think a passing game that wants to be free and loose and easy and go downfield a lot relies on good protection.
Yes.
And if you don't have that, then maybe you need, what's the opposite of free? Confined?
Tight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what?
And that is exactly what he was talking about and what we've said. I mean, playing not to lose.
Yeah, well,
when you're playing not to lose, you're really tight and you're concerned about every little thing and you can't just let it go.
See, but I think the problem is, I think if Auburn had played tight after Oklahoma, if they had been overly, if they had gone into the Tupper shell, Bill, they probably would have won that game. But to me, it's
yeah. I don't know that they were playing that way then. I think right. It's been, you know, hitting the road, the open date, and now trying to reassess and like, crap, we've got to change things.
Well,
we can't take those chances.
Yeah, against Missouri, you needed to keep scoring. Like my problem against Missouri wasn't that they threw the ball when they should have run it pass to Robert Lewis. Like you weren't going to beat Missouri with 17 points. Like you needed to keep going in that situation. But no, I think there's been an issue of is it too. You know, if the offense needs to play free, like maybe the offense needs to play a little bit more confined. It needs to be a little bit more constricted. It needs to be a little bit more, it needs to be, I would say less aggressive. I'd say probably is the situation where it's like, to me, if your pass protection is an issue, then you need to either work on an offense that gets the ball out of the quarterback's hands quicker or work on a lot of the misdirection stuff that teams use. I mean, Auburn's not the only team in the league with, or the only team in the bowl subdivision with these problems, but I think there's a stubbornness in, we're going to run these offense even if some of the personnel...
We're still going to, right.
Mm-hmm. Even if some of the personnel doesn't necessarily fit, rather than, well, I've got a team, you know, that my offense that shoots a lot of threes isn't going to work with these shooters, maybe we need to take it to the basket a little bit more.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our good friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Let's get to the hotline, and Roger is up first. Hey, Roger.
Hello, Roger.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing fine.
Hey, I saw this little stat here. I thought it was pretty interesting. These are the goals with the most draft picks over the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Georgia. Number two, Alabama. Number three, Michigan. Number four, LSU. Number five, Ohio State. Number six, Penn State. Number seven, tied is Clemson, Notre Dame. Number eight is Florida. Number nine tied is Oklahoma, Oregon, and Texas. And number 10 tied is Auburn and USC. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the schools at the very top are the ones that are generally at the very top of the recruiting rankings every year. So, I mean, it's not a huge shock that if you bring in really good talent, it's a pretty good chance you're going to put it out.
I'd be even more curious to know, if you isolate – well, go ahead.
I guess my point is, though, did y'all think Auburn was 10th on that list?
No. Honestly, I wouldn't. Now, of course, if you have teams tied for – multiple teams tied for 9th, that really isn't the 10th spot next.
This is overall – this is being taken anywhere in the draft, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I think if you were to isolate day one – or if you were to isolate
first 2 days,
the first three rounds,
which is the first draft, first 2 days.
You might see a more substantial drop off between Auburn and the top teams in the SEC.
But at a minimum, wouldn't you agree it shouldn't correlate to probably four straight losing seasons to have that many draft picks?
No,
you're right.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
It's not. I mean, Auburn doesn't have and hasn't had the talent of Alabama, Georgia, or LSU over the last few years. But, Auburn, you saw last year they should have been better than 6-7. And you know that this team ought to be better than 2-5.
Yeah, I agree. Another point, pretty obvious we need a quarterback depth. is it true that Jordan McLeod wanted to come to Auburn for little to nothing, or either as a walk-on, and we wouldn't accept him?
I don't know that.
Okay. Because he's at Texas State. That's a transfer from James Madison. I think he won Player of the Year last year at a Sunbelt Conference, I believe.
No, I had not heard that, but that would be a little disappointing if he didn't really if it wasn't somebody that was going to set them back NIL wise, just give them more competition in the quarterback room.
Right, and I believe I heard y'all yesterday. Did y'all say the last ranked win we had was 21? Was that Bo Nix?
That was Ole Miss. That was Bo Nix's second to last start as Auburn, or one of his last starts as Auburn quarterback against Ole Miss.
14 straight losses against ranked teams.
And I'm not sure. I saw this on the internet. I think it's true, but do y'all know when our last ranked road win was?
Wow.
Maybe A&M. Maybe A&M.
And I heard it was 2014 against Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss. Is that correct?
I think Auburn's beaten a team in the top 25 on the road since then, but I don't want to guarantee it. But I think I want to say A&M was in the top 25 when Auburn beat them with Bo Nix in 19 at Texas A&M. But
yeah, I believe. Yeah, I was thinking that there was an A&M win in there, but it's still been a while. That's still 5 years.
Yeah, some of these lists. Sometimes they manipulate you. Right. Some of them might mean, are they ranked at the end of the year?
Right, but no, it's got to be over a team that was ranked when you played them. Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure they were.
Okay. I guess last point, Percy Lewis seemed like a good player at Mississippi State last year. What exactly has happened to be unplayable? I mean, how can you flip that bad?
It's a different style of offense. And Percy wasn't a full time starter at Mississippi State last year.
No, but
he started,
I think he graded pass protection.
You know what? That we're going to talk to Jake Crane at the bottom of the hour, and I'm gonna ask Jake that very question because sometimes you'll see, and I don't know exactly. I'm not in a position to tell you exactly how well an offensive lineman played. When you're talking about like a guy at Percy Lewis last year at Mississippi State, I don't know. But it's pretty surprising just as a veteran guy who's played in the SEC before to come in and struggle like this.
Hey, and right. you brought up something, and I started looking this up yesterday. I didn't get a chance to get all the way into it. I noticed on Auburn's game notes this week, it pointed out Auburn's all-time record in conference play and their all-time record at home. And their all-time record on the road in conference play, I'll read that to you from the game notes. And in all-time SEC play, Auburn has a .548 winning percentage. In SEC games at home, Auburn .667. On the road, Auburn is 12 games under .500 all-time in SEC play. Most of the Auburn, that means when I started looking back, Auburn was at .500. A few years ago, because Auburn has not fared well on the road in conference play over the last few years.
Right, and the conference is stronger than
it
was back then. It's only going to get tougher. So, all right, guys. Well, I appreciate y'all taking my call. You have a good one.
Good hearing from you, Roger. That's some great points. 334-321-1390. Love for you to join us. We have one more segment before we check in with Jake Crane of Crane & Company here in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com.
There's nothing better than football in the South, except when you score a touchdown on your next vehicle at Pig Enterprises. Our lineup is
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here with Drew at the controls. And yeah, we're fielding your calls on anything you want to talk about sports-wise. I mean, a lot of it still is on Auburn, obviously, as this season. Everybody's trying to figure out what has happened, what can be done. It's getting more difficult each week because this team, I said it, you know, in the Oklahoma game, they just need a win. They needed a win to believe. And now it's getting harder and harder for them to believe that they're going to be able to pull this out. When a game is tight, you just, I mean, I know the fan base. I know everybody in the fan base. Everybody I've talked to has said, well, I just knew that was going to be a loss. And that's a terrible thing to think that the players are thinking, but how can they not?
Although according to Eugene Asante, you had players celebrating up 17-3. So I don't think the Auburn sideline knew they were going to lose that game.
No, but they were celebrating 7-3. But when it got 17-13?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I knew they were going to lose 17-13. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
what did they think?
I mean, once Brady.
Actually, it was 17-14.
Once Brady Cook gets back out there to the roar of the crowd.
And they get complete the 78-yard pass?
Yeah.
I think once that happened. Yeah. I didn't see much celebrating on the sidelines then.
And I think even before that, when Auburn comes up early, just like Oklahoma, when you come up empty on a drive that would have finished the game.
Yeah,
I mean, once you leave a door open like that, the other team's going to walk right through it. Oklahoma did it, and Missouri did too. So on the question of looking elsewhere on your depth chart. And people, you know, we had a caller in the last hour who talked about Peyton Thorne versus mm-hmm. going to one of the other guys. Even if you think the production might drop off, the fact that you have the fact that you have somebody with eligibility remaining in Hank or Walker potentially to play. I mean, where else on the depth chart do you feel like Auburn could? I mean, excusing quarterback, like
yeah. I mean, to talk about the offensive line, we mentioned it a little bit yesterday.
Tyler,
I mean, they're. That's about the only guy I could think of. We have not seen him. We really haven't seen him. And we'd heard so much of the boy. He's really going to be a good player. He's just raw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about like who are guys that aren't playing a lot right now that could compete for serious playing time on next year's Auburn team or are expected.
All right, there are a few more. There are a few more defensively.
Yeah,
we saw Amaris Williams this past Saturday against Missouri. I think you're going to see more of him. And Hugh Freeze.
Joe Phillips feels like a red shirt.
Yeah. Hugh Freeze. Well, I think Auburn's okay at linebacker. Yeah. But Hugh Freeze mentioned TJ Lindsey and DJ Reed as guys that maybe you put them in on third down to have fresh guys and just say, go after the quarterback.
We're at the point, too, where some of these guys could redshirt and still play a lot. Right, depending on
yes.
how many games you want to
use. That's true. They could
They could
five games left.
I mean, some of these guys that they haven't, I mean, has TJ Lindsey played?
I think he played maybe Alabama A&M.
I don't know. Like if TJ Lindsey, if TJ Lindsey or DJ Reed haven't played, DJ Reed took a redshirt last year, right?
Right.
But TJ Lindsey potentially could be a could be somebody who takes the redshirt and also gets to play. Although I think if a guy can help you right now, you question why you're worried about the redshirt, right? Kidding. I mean, it's I don't think Hugh Freeze has the luxury.
Again,
to worry.
You can't be counting on we'll have this guy next year and beyond.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze can't be too worried about 2028. Right now, when it comes to his depth chart, I guess you could see more Jeremiah Cobb. I mean, although he's not that young, right? I mean, but he's
a true sophomore.
Yeah, I mean, second year player is going to be on next year's team.
You hope,
you think, yeah. I don't know. I mean, you're seeing a little bit more Mike O'Reilly since the Brandon Frazier injury. But I don't know. I mean, again, I think part of what's discouraging about the season is that when you're so senior laden, it felt like hey, it's now or never.
Yes,
for a lot of these
absolutely.
Guys, and it's not now, Bill.
No, I tend to agree there. 334-321-1390. Back to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybarn. Mike is up next. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Hey, I got to tell you, it was a beautiful day up there in Columbia. Went up there with a few couples, and it was great. One of the first times I've been to a Threat Stadium when we were amongst Auburn fans, so that was very, very nice.
Well, that's nice.
Good showing, and, pretty good crowd. So question for you. And Bill, you and I are probably if we weren't there when dirt was created, it was still fresh.
Sad, but
so
true.
We've seen a little bit of football.
Yep.
So let me ask you a question: why do you think over multiple coaches and multiple years of recruiting, and now with the transfer portal and guys moving around so much, why would you say Auburn has perpetually had problems with its offensive line? We do now. We have for gads of years.
Yes.
And our line is just really rough. And I've been stating that for years, and it doesn't seem to improve. Thoughts?
That's a very good question. I felt that it became less of a priority. As Gus's tenure went on, Auburn seemed to target top players on the offensive line, and if they didn't get those, they decided not to take a lot of plan Bs, things like that. And they decide I was more than a little concerned when there were a couple of years that came and went with, well, we didn't get one of the top ones. We're not going to settle. We're going to wait and get a top one next year. And then you don't get a top one the next year, and you're having to then reach out and look for transfers before the days of the transfer portal. Remember, Auburn's bringing in graduate transfers to try to help them solidify the offensive line. So that felt like a just poor judgment or poor planning in recruiting.
Would you say since the 2013 season, more often than not, the offensive line has felt like a weakness?
Yes.
So I would,
yeah, I would think
cause,
so.
Cause it's, I mean, because there were a couple of seasons under Gus, but since then, it seemed like, and maybe it's the Tuberville and Chizik recruits, evolving out of the program. But once it became more an offensive line entirely signed by Gus Malzahn, it seemed like he thought he could develop guys that weren't necessarily everybody's idea of an SEC player or an SEC offensive lineman.
But they weren't even recruiting that many high school linemen.
They weren't.
They weren't signing at least that many high school linemen.
Well, wasn't Hugh the first one to sign a highly ranked offensive lineman from high school and the last handful of coaches?
Yes.
And
DeAndre Carter, by the way, is apparently working number two at left guard behind Braden Joyner.
I believe Harsin only signed two offensive linemen out of high school in his tenure. And I know
that was probably under duress, I would imagine.
probably.
I think a lot of people forget or maybe don't realize that offensive line is the longest training period to train up those skills, because it's the individual skill of that guy, and then he's got to get really good, and then he learns how to play as part of a team. And, I have OCD about this one with the games. I'll go back, usually rewatch the film on Sunday, and watch it. And basically I'm like old times, I'm grading out the film, and I'll watch every single player. And Connor Liu does, more often than not, does a very good job. You can see he's making the correct calls. Sometimes, the enemy gets a vote, and sometimes they blow up the play. But he does a good job. Our guards do an okay job. And our tackles, God love them, but, I think they grew up as matadors. Either that or as cedars at a restaurant. Oh, come on in.
Aye, aye, aye. Right, it's
Toro, Toro.
No, I know,
thanks,
what you mean.
Guys, it's, have a good one.
Hey, Mike,
and those
great
are two.
Stuff.
No, and those are two tackles that Jake Thornton has had a real hand in developing. Over in Too Tall and now Percy. It's a, it's disappointing. So I think that's something. Would Seth Wilford maybe work into the mix as a guy that
I have not heard his name.
That's I haven't either.
I have not heard his name lately. That was a junior college guy that I thought was fairly highly thought of.
There's been absolutely no talk.
I have forgotten about him.
Yeah,
thanks for mentioning.
I mean, he was one of the. I mean, and again, the caution of. The danger of assuming that this is all going to get fixed in the transfer portal is, I think Auburn has gotten good football out of Dylan Wade.
They have.
Dylan Wade was the best tackle in the transfer portal when Auburn signed him. Go back and look at the 24/7 rankings for, that would have been the 23, the 23 portal. Dylan Wade was the best tackle to switch teams. It's rare to have a guy that people project as an NFL left tackle switch teams and reopen the bidding in the portal. You can have some group of five guys, you know, the best ones from the group of five, but you need to be, you know, if you want those kind of results, you need to be getting those kind of players out of high school.
All right. Hey, Yellowhammer, we are way behind. We've got to get to our bottom of the hour break, and we have Jake Crane of Crane & Company coming up. So if you want to give us a call back in a little while, but we've got to get to that bottom of the hour break, and we'll have Jake when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, that, of course, Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Going good, guys. Appreciate y'all having me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, another week. I mean, might as well jump right into it with the thoughts on Auburn's latest same song, different verse this past week against Missouri.
Jake, something we talked about as we try to avoid making the same points over and over again after five losses.
So is Auburn, but how's that working?
Yeah, no, but some, you know, something we were talking about in you know, things you could second guess about this approach, and you know, there's been renewed focus on Auburn's struggles on the offensive line, I think, after the Missouri game, and I would just question, you know, an offense that puts as much pressure on the tackles as it does. It feels like they're, you know, it's a very aggressive offense wanting to throw the ball downfield quite a bit, and we've seen that blow up in Auburn's face more than it should so far this season.
Nothing works. Nothing works.
Yep.
I mean, it's like I hate coming on here every week and saying the same thing, but like it's what happens. Like at this point, we can sit here and talk about the offensive line. Talk about quarterback, we can talk about receivers, we can talk about the defense. It's the crucial moments in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's Auburn's problem. They can't get over that hump. They just don't have – this group just doesn't have it in them. Like, I don't – at what point, you know, we can bounce around, and you're right to talk about the offensive line struggles here, but you're still up double digits in the second half, right? You've got multiple chances to win the game. You drop a touchdown pass in the end zone. You can't stop them on fourth down. I mean, this team is just not clutch at all. That's the worst position group they have, is everybody in the clutch moment. Sometimes it's the kicker. Sometimes it's the DBs. It's a sickness within the program that just older leadership's got to get out. Y'all got out. You got to play the rest of the games, this, that, and the other. You got to get out. You got to give these young guys a chance to turn it around. They're the ones that are going to have to do it. Because this older group, they can't clutch up. They just don't have it in them. They don't have that gene. Now, it doesn't make them bad people. Doesn't mean they're going to be bad businessmen or husbands or fathers. But when it comes to winning football games, this group, especially the older guys, don't know how to do it. I mean, you got the young DBs like Jay Crawford, you know, saying, listen, just give us time. We're going to fix it. The young guys know, the older guys don't know how to win. The fact is, the young guys have got to become the older guys. That's the only way this gets fixed. Just this older group's got to go. Y'all got to get out. Y'all can't do it.
Any younger guys you've been really enthused about, you know, amid results that folks weren't rooting for on the field? You've seen quite a bit of the, you know, the first and second year players Hugh Freeze has brought in. Anybody you're really excited about so far?
Well, you know, the Crawford kid, there's a couple young DBs that I like. I think Riddick at linebacker's got a chance to be really special. Auburn's got to hold on to him. Then offensively, I mean, you've seen the tight game that Cam Coleman has, and Malcolm Simmons and Perry Thompson will come along. So there's young guys. I mean, you look at, I mean, Folk may be the best pass rusher we got. He may be the best defensive player that we got right now, if we're going to be honest. So when I look at this young group, they're going to have to be the ones, and I hope that they've, and again, I'm not trying to be mean. This is just, it's a business. It's about winning. There's way too much money that goes into Auburn football for them not to win. I just hope these younger guys have learned how not to behave in the clutch moment from this older group. Maybe the best lesson these young guys can get is how to not execute in the clutch moments. And that's a sad thing to say. I don't want to sit here and say it. I just hope this doesn't rub off on them. That's what worries me the most, that this losing, I don't want the big moment, or we're going to find a way to screw it up. We really don't believe it. Hugh Freeze said the same thing. They play not to lose,
right?
Not to win. I just hope that doesn't rub off on them.
Yeah, I mean, you hear at times, and it makes sense that you learn more from losing. Well, they ought to be brilliant the way things are going, but no, I mean, we're hearing the right things from the young guys, and it's really encouraging when a Deuce Knight, who just flipped and committed, comes out and tries to let folks know, hey, you know, be patient, it's coming, because it's darn sure not here.
Yeah, well, and that's why, you know, again, there is patience needed with Hugh Freeze. The cavalry is coming. They are coming. There's a certain type of person that they're recruiting, not just a player. And you see some of it from some of these young guys in the game. They are going to bring the winners in here. Auburn's had losers in here for too long. I mean, it's just the truth. So they're going to bring the winners in here, but it's a mentality. It's a personality. It's a characteristic. It's a trait. And those are the guys they're going to get. Because make no mistake, these young guys that you're seeing right now that are watching, they're embarrassed that Auburn is losing. But they want to be the ones to go in there and fix it. And to me, that speaks volumes about their character. And again, these older guys, they're great guys. Auburn doesn't have guys getting arrested a lot or anything like that. They're walking old ladies across the street. They just don't know how to win, and they don't have it in them. And this young group that they have and that they're bringing in, they have that dog in them, and that's what Auburn hasn't had in it. We got just a bunch of nice guys that don't want the big moment. Give me a bunch of guys that are gritty and want to go out there and take it.
You're not here handing out merit badges, Jake, is what it sounds
like. If that's what you want, start a nonprofit or a daycare.
This ain't UNICEF? Is that what you're giving them?
Japan sending PlayStation.
No, so with Jake, I was, you know, we were talking about some of the, you know, some of the spots where Auburn could make, you know, could make an effort to play more of the younger players over the last five games. And with some of these guys, they've been working, you know, largely scout team this year. And I was hoping maybe you could shine some light on, like, if a guy's been largely a scout team performer for much of the season, what's the adjustment like to get him on the field, or you know, what sort of things are worked on if you're gonna let someone make their debut over these final five games?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's as much about guys that have been on the scout team as opposed to guys that have been second and third string on the depth chart, giving them a chance to start. Because, I mean, it's pretty drastic at this point in the season. If you're going to pull somebody off of the scout team to go play the rest of the way and burn that red shirt, the likelihood of that is low. The scenario you're talking about is some of these younger guys that may be behind some older guys that may even have a C on their chest. Like, at this point, you can't have captains that keep screwing it up. I've never seen a team, a group of players that screw up more that have a C on their jersey than what Auburn has right now. But if you're going to take a guy that hasn't played a lot and getting him reps, maybe he's played a little bit, maybe he's played on special teams, it's a big adjustment, but it's not as big as taking somebody who hadn't even gotten any real-life game reps, taking them off the scout team and throwing them in the game.
Yeah, because those guys haven't been going through the game prep or the game plan.
And there's so much, like the week of practice, the prep, all that. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more than what people know.
I would just think a lot of the younger guys you haven't seen yet. Like, the story is, I think that's where they kind of find themselves to this point.
Yeah.
And maybe Auburn reaches down and, you know, maybe there's one or two, but I mean, they've played. You listed a lot of them. Like, they've played a lot of young guys on defense and feel pretty good about what they've seen from the young guys they played on offense too.
No, without a doubt. And I mean, it's something you would hope to be able to sprinkle those guys in when you're winning, so you know that they get some real game experience, some game pressure experience. You know, you don't want to have to throw guys in the fire because of an injury or just because you're giving up on the year. It's a tough spot to be in, right? Because you know you're not winning. If you can sit here and talk about morale and all that stuff's great, but eventually, you know, that losing, it gets to you. It does. So, you know, do you just pull the ripcord and play all the young guys and just go 2-10? You know, I mean, Auburn's staring 3-9 down the barrel right now.
Yeah, they are.
Like it's not just bad. It's a disaster to the point where Hugh's going to have to probably win at least 8 next year. I think that's a real thing.
Well, and that's where, as I told somebody a little while ago, I said, you know, it's I don't know of a coach that is happy with losing ball games if he feels like he's got a chance to win them. It's really hard to do that if you feel like you have a chance. And you can't look at the next three ball games and say, hey, Auburn doesn't have a chance to win them. Now, I'm not saying Auburn should win them because they should have won some ball games up to now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, Auburn is in most of these games. I mean, when have they really gotten, you know, blown out? That's probably the hardest part, is that, you know, that they're in most of these games and you see how close they are, yet they just can't do it. Mm-hmm. They just can't do it. And it'll probably be something similar at Kentucky. Auburn will probably play it real close, find a way to blow it in the end, because that's just in their DNA right now, and that's what they're trying to get out. But it's a hard spot to be in because, you know, you don't want to lose, but you also want to do the best thing going forward for the future. Right. So I don't envy the spot he's in. But when you didn't go get a quarterback out of the portal, when you missed that offensive tackle, when you don't have older guys that want the moment and know how to handle the moment, you get put in these situations. And it's just a combination of a bunch of bad decisions.
Let's look at a couple of other things, because I want to get to some other things before we run out of time. After Georgia's win at Austin this past week, I'm sure that all of us had LSU and A&M, the only two unbeaten teams in the conference, playing this week, and Alabama with two losses. Man, it has been crazy.
Yeah, look, college football, you know, couldn't pass a sobriety test if it wanted to right now, and it's fun. It makes it a lot more fun and a lot more interesting. As far as you know, at the top of the league or where the league is, I mean, this LSU-A&M game is as consequential as any SEC game that we've had. I mean, whoever wins this one firmly puts themselves into the driver's seat, and you look around, and Texas already has a loss in the league. Georgia already has a loss in the league. Bama's got two. Mm-hmm. Tennessee's got one. Ole Miss has two. You're running out of teams that can not only make the SEC championship, but can win a tiebreaker when it comes down to teams that have one loss in the league. So we're going to keep learning as it goes on. I don't think there's one overarching dominant team. And week by week, we're going to keep finding out more and more pieces of this puzzle.
Hey, one of the things we looked at in the first hour, there is a possibility of a five-way tie at 7-1 in this league, because the loser of A&M LSU is going to have one, and if that other team just loses one, there could be five teams tied at 7-1 at the end of the year.
Yeah, and then they all just meet at a gas station with Billy Bob Thornton to flip a coin to see who goes. I mean, look, this is the one kind of chaotic part about not having divisions in the conference, which I was all for them getting rid of them, is that you can have these crazy scenario tiebreakers that can really, really, you know, throw a huge wrench into it, to where we're getting down to like the fourth, fifth, or sixth tiebreaker, which I think actually the last tiebreaker is flipping a coin.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and because all these teams haven't played each other. So I mean, they're going to be some crazy things. You may have teams going, hey, we hope we lose that tiebreaker and aren't even in the SEC championship game.
Do they meet at like a roadside diner, like in Friday Night Lights, to do the coin flip in like some undisclosed, some Waffle House outside Alabama?
You got to meet at like a Dreamland or something.
Ooh, thinking that's something. I feel like Sonic would want in on that. Now that they're running ads all over the country.
Look, they'd find a way to make money off of it. It'd be like the decision. Like, it'd be the decision right after the election.
Great stuff, Jake.
Yeah, Jake, before we run out of time, what all have you got going? Who have you got coming on? And let folks know how they can take advantage and catch it all.
Oh, look, it's just, you know, at this point, we're so deep in college football and the NFL, talking Auburn, talking a little bit of everything. Got Tim Brando coming on tomorrow to talk the whole world of college football. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N-N Company, on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's going to turn eventually, everybody out there. It's just, man, it's tough watching them let go of the rope at the end each week.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks again, Jake. Great stuff. We'll talk to you again next time.
Y'all be good.
All right, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us as he does each Tuesday afternoon. We'll get to our final break. We ought to have time for a call or two. Come on in and join us as we wind it down here on the Tuesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Russell Building Supply is your hometown home improvement store. You'll find what you need.